Well, on Sunday mornings, we've been thinking about the grace of God. And we've been looking at the parable of the two sons. We looked at the younger son and saw ourselves, God be merciful to me, a sinner. And we looked at the older son and saw ourselves, God be merciful to me, a Pharisee. And we've seen that the answer to our love of self and sin and this world is not to try harder, do better, because we can't finish with self and sin and this world like that. We can't unfill our hearts. We can't empty our hearts. The answer is for my heart to be conquered by a greater love, the love of God, a love so free, so strong, so wonderful, that it progressively expels the love of self and sin and this world. And we thought about the expulsive power of a new affection. And then last time we thought about God's love. That God should love me, a sinner. And that God should give his son to save me. And that God should give his son to the cross, that I might enjoy everlasting life, the love of God. Christ was all my anguish, that I might be all joy. Cast off, that I might be brought in. Trodden down as an enemy, that I might be welcomed as a friend. Surrendered to hell's worst, that I might attain heaven's best. And if you remember then that meditation, the man who wrote it goes on to say, O Father, who spared not thine only Son, that thou mightest spare me, help me to adore thee by lips and life. Christian friends, the love of God. As Wesley says, whence to me this waste of love? And we feel it, don't we? God's love is wasted on me. Why should you love me? It's a waste of love. I'm not worth it. Well, this morning we're going to begin to think about our response to these things. Now, how would you sum up the younger son in the parable of the two sons? How would you sum him up in his unconverted days? No need to turn to it, but I'll just read it. We're familiar with it now. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he divided to them his livelihood. How would you sum up that younger son? He simply says, give me. And how would you sum up the older son? So he also said to his father, Lo, these many years I've been serving you. I never transgressed your commandment at any time. And yet you never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friend. You never gave me. One son says, give me. The other son says, you never gave me. For both these brothers, the universe revolves around them. Both through their father in terms of what he can give to them. Give me. Me first. So the sinner and the Pharisee are ruled by the same thing, aren't they? Me. Me first. What about me? And so when the sinner and the Pharisee are converted, what might we expect to happen? Well, if you're finishing with your old life, it must mean what? It must mean the end of me. It must mean the death of me. As Paul says, I have been crucified with Christ. So with me dead, what is to live in the place of me? Well, the expulsive power of a new affection. The death of self-love is to lead to the birth of a new love. Love for Christ. So from now on, I no longer live for me, I live for him. Listen to how Paul puts it in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. He says, for Christ's love compels us, because we're convinced that one died for all, and therefore all died. And he died for all that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised again. Now, brothers and sisters, did you hear that? Paul says, the person I once was, me first, is now dead, buried. And I am now a new person. What characterizes that new person? Well, I no longer live for myself. I live for Christ. And that's not just sort of some theological statement. Says Paul, is to be the driving force of your life. He says, the love of Christ compels me. The love of Christ constrains me. And now live for him. It's the expulsive power of a new affection. But Christian friends, do we really believe it? When the truth hits the road, do I really believe it? Who rules my life? Is it me? Or is it Christ? What compels me? What gets me up and gets me going and drives me forward? Is it the love of me? What pleases me? What's good for me? Or is it the love of Christ? So we need to look at these things and work them through. So we've got two things to say this morning, 2 points. And point number one we'll simply call authentic Christianity. So come with me to the first reading which we had, Matthew 16 and verse 24. So Matthew 16, 24, Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself. Now, what does Jesus mean? Well, says Jesus, if you are to be my disciple, you must deny self. Not self-denial. It's not hair shirts and bachelor priests and giving up chocolate for Lent. It's the denial of self. You knock at my door. This is just for the purposes of illustration, all right? I wouldn't do this. But you knock at my door. I open it a little and say, oh, it's you. Go away. You're not wanted. Slam the door. I won't do it. But what have I done to you? I've denied you, haven't I? I've denied you access. You can't come in. In every day of a believer's life, self comes knocking. Happen every day. It'll happen all through the day. Self will come knocking at the door. Let me in. What about me? What about my interests? What about my image? What are people going to say about me? Well, you kept me out yesterday. Let me in today. What about putting me first for a change? And every day I'm to deny self. Oh, it's you. Go away. You're not wanted. And I'm to slam the door in the face of self. Do you see? If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself. I refuse to make myself the center of my thoughts, my plans, my life. So do I? Or is self ensconced in the bedroom and in the kitchen and in the front room and wherever else in the house? Self is to be deposed because another reigns. Christ now reigns. It's therefore Jesus first. And me second? No. Me third? No. Well, what about me coming in number 10? No. Self is denied. Go away. You're not wanted. Because anything less is giving in to self. And if I give in to self, and you can describe it on self-esteem, self-determination, self-interest, self-satisfaction, self-importance, self-indulgence, self-something. If I give in to self, it won't be Christ who's ruling, will it? I won't be following him. So I'm to deny self. Paul, at his conversion, put it like this. Lord, what do you want me to do? Paul, as a mature Christian, put it like this. For me to live is Christ. But Jesus puts it even more emphatically. If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross. A disciple is not above his master. As Jesus took up his cross, so all who follow him must take up their cross. What does Jesus mean? Well, I don't just deny self. I don't just leave self, as it were, on the other side of the door, knocking away, trying to get in. I'm to die to self. Self-execution. What's a cross for? Well, a cross is for putting people to death. That's what you use a cross for, isn't it? It's an instrument of execution. So to take up my cross means I'm to execute myself. I'm to put self to death. I must lose my life. I forfeit control. I take a one-way journey to a place of execution. Jesus is saying, my claims upon you are total and absolute. We haven't sort of entered into a bit of an agreement and a bit of give and take and a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and we'll come to some sort of compromise. My claims upon you are total. So Gerard Hemmings is now dead. He's nailed to a cross. And Christ is on the throne. It means my life is now his. It's all for Jesus. It's a life surrendered unconditionally to him. I have a purpose on earth. But what is that purpose? It is to please him. Even if I displease everyone else, I'm to please him. He's to be the center of everything. For me to live is Christ. I eat, drink, sleep Christ. Let's put it another way. If I'm taking up my cross, I pain self to please Jesus. I put myself out to please Christ. I do it voluntarily, don't I? I'm called to take up my cross. It's not something that's, as it were, dropped on me. It's something I voluntarily take up. And Jesus says in Luke 9, verse 23, it's something I must do daily. And yes, it's painful and humiliating and shameful. And for me, for self, it means a long, lingering death. But that's what Jesus says. And the Christian life isn't just warm feelings towards Jesus, is it? It's obeying his voice. It's all or nothing. And what do I get in return? I get Jesus. If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Now, Christian friends, that is authentic Christianity. Six times in the Gospels, Jesus calls us to take up our cross. So it's important, isn't it? Every time you meet me, I keep talking about the same thing. You might think, well, I'm wittering on, but you might think, he obviously thinks this is very important. If we keep meeting Jesus in the pages of Scripture, and he keeps saying the same thing to us, He must think it's very important. In fact, he must think it's fundamental. He keeps saying, take up your cross. In Mark chapter 8, he turns to the crowds. All the crowds are following him. They think this Jesus is wonderful. But he turns to them and says, you must take up your cross if you're going to be my disciple. I'm not putting this in the small print. Oh, I didn't realize the Christian life was like that. I'm framing it in front of your eyes, he says, for you to see now that if you follow me, it will mean taking up your cross. In fact, in Luke 14, he's even more emphatic. He says, whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. If you won't take up your cross, then you have no part of me. You can't be my disciple. Now, Christian friend, do you believe him? Do you think Jesus is being serious? This is authentic Christianity. There aren't two versions of it out there. You know, there's one version for the keen. Well, they take up their cross, they really go for it. And then there's a sort of version which for the not quite so keen. You know, the sort of ones who, like a pastel shade of the gospel. I mean, we were looking at a very handsome clock. That was very reasonably priced. So we asked, is it authentic? Is it the real thing? And they said, no, it's a reproduction. No, it was much cheaper and almost looked like the real thing. Only it wasn't the real thing. So if you're looking for a cheaper, less costly, less demanding Christianity, for those who aren't quite so keen, a Christianity where you get to keep things the way that you like them, you know, you can believe all the right things, you can sign up to all the right things, but you don't really have to change too much. But if you find it, remember it's not the real thing. It might go under the label of being reformed or evangelical or what the Bible teaches, but it's false. So brothers and sisters, you can either be an evangelical unbeliever or you can take up your cross and be a follower of Jesus. It's all or nothing. If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Let's go on to our second point. Isn't all this a bit harsh? Isn't it all a bit sort of threatening? Doesn't it sound a bit like, you know, Jesus standing there wielding a big stick and saying, you've got to do this. If you don't do this, you'll have no part of me. Is it all a bit harsh? A bit cold and frosty and you feel the pinch of it? Well, the Gospels are arranged, aren't they? Matthew, Mark, Luke and John. So we're going to look at Mark, Luke, John and then Matthew. So come with me to Mark chapter 5. Now, Jesus, he's come to the country of the Gadarenes, and he meets a man who we've come to call Legion. And Mark 5, verse 3, Legion, who had his dwelling among the tombs, excuse me, and no one could bind him, not even with chains, because he'd often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been pulled apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces, neither could anyone tame him. And always night and day he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying out, and cutting himself with stones. Self-harming is a living among the tombs, screaming, screeching. It's a nightmare existence, isn't it? And then we begin to understand what happened. His personality has been submerged beneath a whole legion of demons. Verse 9, when Jesus talks to the man, we hear the voice of the demon, but he's not a demon, it's a whole legion. And my name is Legion, for we are many. Well, you know the story. Jesus dismisses the demons, and our man is transformed. And we come to verse 15. Then they came to Jesus and saw the one who had been demon-possessed and had the legion sitting and clothed and in his right mind.
and they were afraid.
Jesus has to leave. When he gets into the boat to go, verse 18, he who had been demon-possessed begged him that he might be with him. Let me go with you. Verse 19, however, Jesus did not permit him, but said to him, go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has had compassion on you. Go home. You haven't been home in a long time, have you? And when you go home, they won't recognize you. They'll ask you, what's happened? You've been changed, you've been transformed. And then you tell them your story. Tell them this wonderful story. Tell them of the amazing grace that has saved you. Tell them of Jesus. Tell them of the Lord. Now, Christian friends, is that a hardship? Is our man a reluctant disciple? Has he been given a miserable calling? Is he being coerced into doing something he just doesn't want to have to do? Maybe he preferred to go back to the tombs of the way things were. Of course not. He's got wonderful news to tell. Go home. Go see your family. Go see your friends. They'll say, what has happened? Well, tell them. And for him, that's the outworking of denying himself, taking up his cross, and following Jesus. Luke 7. Luke 7 and verse 36. Then one of the Pharisees asked Jesus to eat with him, and he went to the Pharisee's house and sat down to eat, and behold, a woman in the city who was a sinner. When she knew that Jesus sat at the table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of fragrant oil, and stood at his feet behind him, weeping. And she began to wash his feet with her tears, and wiped them with the hair of her head. And she kissed his feet, and anointed them with fragrant oil. It's costly, extravagant devotion, isn't it? You get the whole impression that nothing is too much for Jesus. She'll do anything. She just can't stop herself. Why? Well, we looked at this the other day. Jesus gives the explanation, isn't he? In verse 44, he turns to the Pharisee. Speaking to the Pharisee, Simon, we read, he turned to the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? I entered your house and you gave me no water for my feet, but she has washed my feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head. You gave me no kiss, but this woman has not ceased to kiss my feet since the time I came in. You did not anoint my head with oil, but this woman has anointed my feet with fragrant oil. Therefore I say to you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven. For she loved much, but to whom little is forgiven, the same loves little. What's the explanation of this extravagant display? Well, she's been freely forgiven, hasn't she? She's a great sinner, but a great sinner freely forgiven, and therefore she freely loves. Now again, Christian friends, is that a hardship? Is she being pushed? Is she being coerced? Is she being threatened? Is Jesus called to a hard call, a harsh call? All that money she spent on that oil in that flask, should she have spent that money on herself? You know, if she was practically minded, maybe she'd say, well, you know, you ought to look after the pennies. You know, all that oil just washed over his feet. Not so his feet need cleaning, surely. Why do it? Be more practically minded. You know, look after those pennies. Was it the best use of her money? And also, why put herself in that really embarrassing situation? You know, she's a great sinner. Everyone knows who the sort of person she is. You know, hears Simon's voice. Doesn't he know, you know, who's touching him? She's got a big reputation, this woman. Everyone in the area knows about her. And now she's with Jesus, but she's in the house of a Pharisee. All the eyes are going to be looking at her. You know, it's a really embarrassing thing to do, isn't it? But as soon as she knows where Jesus is, she can't stop herself from going and finding him. And whatever other eyes might be doing, and no doubt some Pharisee eyes are drilling into her, thinking, this is shameful, this is disgraceful. Woman, what are you doing? She's not thinking about herself, is she? Self is now dead. She's in love with another. With a pure love. But can't stop expressing herself in this wonderful devotion. Well, okay, all right, you know, spend the money, fair enough. You want to go and show your love for Jesus and you don't mind what other people think, okay. But you have to be on the floor. Come on, woman, get up off the floor. You're not a slave, are you? And your tears to wash his feet? Oh, come on, dear, get up off your feet. Each time self would be cutting in, wouldn't it? Saying, oh, no, too far. But self is dead. And in fact, her response is proportionate, isn't it? It's not over the top, it's proportionate. Because freely forgiven, she freely loves. And for her, it's the outworking of denying self, taking up her cross, following Jesus. Mark, Luke, John, come with me to John chapter 20. John 20, verse 1. It's the Sunday. Jesus was crucified on the Friday. Now, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb early while it was still dark and saw the stone had been taken away from the tomb. Mary Magdalene, what do we know about her? Well, we're told in Luke, the Lord had cast out of her seven demons. So if ever there was a woman who was a slave to Satan, it was Mary. But Jesus has saved her. That was her old life. She now has a new life. And so we find her, John 19:25, standing at the cross. And Matthew 27 tells us, that we find her present at Jesus' burial. She's at the cross, she's at his burial, and now here she is hurrying to the tomb. First thing in the morning, it's not even light. On the Friday, she's the last to leave. On the Sunday, she's the first to arrive. Now, what does that tell you? The last to leave, the first to arrive. It tells you that Christ has all her heart. Christian friend, does he have yours? Are you the first to leave and the last to arrive? But Mary, you must be worn out. You know, these last few days have been traumatic. You must be exhausted. And Mary, you know, if you go to the tomb, first thing, you're going to face impossible obstacles. I mean, who's going to move that great big stone? Woman like you can't do it. Don't have a lie in. And anyway, Mary, what can you do? He's dead. But you can't leave his side, can she? And even if he is a dead Christ, which of course we know, and Mary will soon discover he isn't, but even if he's a dead Christ, she'll still do anything for him to show her love. Even a dead Christ commands her devotion. And again, Christian friends, for her, it's the outworking of Matthew 16:24. What is she doing? She's denying self, isn't she? She's taking up her cross. She's following him. So, Christian friends, do you see our three examples? What are we reading? We're reading about people who are putting themselves out. But is their service too costly? Is it too painful? Is it too extreme? Because it means for these three, denying self, taking up their cross, following Jesus. Is Jesus asking too much? And the answer, of course, is no. What we see from all three is the proportionate response to his love. how freely he's loved them, the great things the Lord has done for them, the wonders of his love. And therefore they gladly, freely, joyfully give themselves to him. Why then, Christian friends, do we balk and take a step back at Jesus' words? Glory be to Mark and Luke and John. It's time we went to Matthew then, isn't it? So come with me now to Matthew 19, the second reading which we had. Matthew 19 and the rich young ruler. Now behold, one came and said to him, Matthew 19 verse 16, "Good teacher, what thing shall I do that I may have eternal life?" And Jesus questions him. He questions him on the commandments. And in fact, not all the commandments. He questions him on commandments 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Okay? So 5 to 9, Jesus covers in verses 18 and 19. Verse 20, the young man said, "All these things I've kept from my youth. What do I still lack?" The one commandment Jesus didn't mention, he now applies. Commandment number 10. You shall not covet. Jesus said to him, "If you want to be perfect, go sell what you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And come, follow me." But when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. And far from being a good lad, we now realize that this young man is ruled by another love. It's a love of money, isn't it? Love of possessions, love of things. He's got great possessions. He's not prepared to part with them. He's a coveter. So Jesus says to him, look, finish with that sin. Repent. Finish with your old master. And come and serve a new master who demands allegiance in all things. If you want to be perfect, go sell what you have, give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And come, follow me. In fact, in Mark's gospel, it's even more explicit what Jesus says. Because Jesus says to him, come, take up the cross and follow me. So Jesus actually says to him, take up the cross and follow me. But when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. Now, the more I think about that, the more incredible it appears, doesn't it? Think about that. He's given a choice. Jesus says, you can keep what you have, or you can follow me. You can live for yourself, or you can die to self. You can take up your cross or you can walk away. And given the choice, what does he do? He puts himself first. He refuses the cross. He takes what he thinks is going to be the pain-free option. But what does it say? This is what I think is extraordinary. He went away sorrowful. He thinks he's taking the pain-free option, but he walks away sorrowful. He puts himself first, and by doing so, it leads to sorrow. Now, think about that. What's the implication of that? The implication is then that had he denied himself, had he taken up his cross, had he gone with Jesus, he would have had joy. But when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. Think about that. If putting himself first, I'm going to say it again, because it needs to sink in, doesn't it? If putting himself first led to sorrow, then by implication, denying himself and going with Jesus would have led to what? Is someone going to give me an answer? Joy. Let's say it again, right? I'm going to say it's because I don't think it really goes in sometimes. I don't think it's gone into my head. Right? So I'll ask you, you can all say joy, all right? Okay. If putting himself first led to sorrow, then by implication, denying himself, taking up his cross, going with Jesus, would have led to
joy.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? He chooses the path to sorrow, thinking it's the pain-free option. Because he won't take up his cross. He thinks he's saving his life. He thinks he'll be happy. But he actually walks away miserable. And of course, more than that, he loses his life. So Christian friends, Jesus' words, are they really harsh? You see, self says, oh, that's really harsh. I don't want to hear that. But actually, as we get under the skin and we really begin to examine what Jesus is saying, we realize his words are words of love, words of generosity, words of kindness, words of the most wonderful invitation. Yes, it's going to be cost, but you have me. These are words spoken in love. They're an invitation, he says, to choose life and joy. When did Peter weep bitter tears? When he denied himself? Or when he denied Christ? So why then do I feel threatened by Jesus' call to deny myself and take up my cross and follow him? The cross sounds harsh, doesn't it? And sure, it's painful. Childbirth is harsh. And childbirth is painful. But isn't it worth it when you have a child in your arms? And denying self and taking up my cross is simply the birth pangs of spiritual joy. You will never have spiritual joy unless you go through the pain of taking up your cross and denying yourself. The death of the love of self leads to the birth of the love of Christ. But when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. He had tack and tinsel and rubbish. He said, I'd rather stick with that. And went away a miserable man. If only he'd follow Christ. He'd have joy inexpressible, wouldn't he? And full of glory. So Christian friends, do you get it? When Jesus says, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Are you really hearing that for what it is? Isn't it the voice of the bridegroom to his bride, the beloved to his church? And he's saying, love me. Love me. Don't let there not be any rivals to your love for me. And love doesn't know where to stop, does it? Like that woman washing Christ's feet with her tears. Love doesn't know where to stop. It can't. Love's stronger than death. Love will go all the way and more. That's what he's saying. Love me. Love me. Love me. And may there be no rivals. So let's draw it to a close. Christian friend, when am I sorrowful? When am I sad? And of course, there are thousands of answers to that, aren't there? And there are thousands of answers which are legitimate and right. There are all sorts of things in this cursed world that make us sad, that break our hearts, and we shed tears over them. But I wonder sometimes that the reason we're sad is because hearing Christ's call, I've chosen to put myself first. And I've therefore walked away sorrowful. When the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful. Why do I at times feel sorrowful about my successful career? Why is it at times I feel upset about my comfortable standard of living? Why do I feel sad sometimes about a hobby that gives me endless hours of pleasure? And I can be sad even though my children are doing well, even though sometimes all my children are converted. And I can be sorrowful about my involvement in church life. Maybe it's because, Christian friend, Christ has put his finger on something. He's applied a commandment that means change, that means the death of self. It means a cross to be nailed to. And I've said no. What Jesus says to that young man, if you want to be perfect, go sell what you have and give to the poor. Now that's extreme, isn't it? If you've got lots of possessions, and I think it's in Mark, he says, go and sell all that you have. And Christ says, go and sell everything you've got and give it away. Because that's the proof that you're no longer a covetous man. Well, that's harsh, isn't it? That's extreme. Only fanatics and extremists do something like that. And so he says, no, 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 no. And maybe, Christian friend, you've made the same equation. The Lord's put his finger on something and you've cut in somewhere along the way and you've said, no, 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 the Lord can't really mean that. Because that's going too far. And after all, I've kept all the other commandments. And you see, you pursue your career for yourself. And you haven't reviewed your giving to the Lord's work for years. And that hobby, which is good when it's in its place, is actually wasting half your life. And I'm sad about my children because time and again I've put them before the Lord. And I idolize them. And I've set thresholds on my involvement in church life. And I say, I'm not getting too involved. You know, I'm going to be the last in and the first out. And it's been me first. And I've taken what I think is the pain-free option, but actually what I've got is sorrow and sadness. And maybe I don't even know where it's coming from. I just know that in my Christian life, I just feel an ache, a sadness, an emptiness, a sorrow, as though I have walked away from the Lord, but I can't quite work out what it is. And maybe it's a drumbeat that's been going on in your life, Christian friend, for years and years and years, and you've been refusing to listen to it, and you've got so used to it. You know, we live opposite the trains. When people come to stay, they get woken up at 5 a.m. because some train went through. We don't wake up the trains. You get used to anything. Maybe the Lord's kept putting his finger on it. You say, no, that's too extreme. No, you don't mean that. No, I don't believe that. You can't ask that of me. I've kept all the other commands, but not that. Not that. And you got used to it, and it's just become a background noise. And that's why you don't know quite where it's coming from. But you know that in your Christian life, there's a sadness and a sorrow and a sense of loss and the things aren't what they should be. And where is this joy that Christians keep speaking about? And it's because, Christian friend, on this issue, you and Christ have parted company. And you thought you'd take the pain-free option. And it has made you sad, sad, sad. And far from finding your life, you must feel a sense of losing it. When all the time I might have known the joy of walking with Christ. Well, we'll stop there. But maybe, Christian friends, it's time for some soul searching. Some things are buried very deep in us, aren't they? We don't know quite where it's coming from, what's really going on. Maybe I need to go home. Okay, we need food and things need to be sorted out and kids and so on. But sometime today, go home and shut the door and get alone with him and talk about this. Lord, show me the things in you. Show me the things in me that aren't right. Show me the unclean way in me. Get alone with Jesus. Don't walk away. Don't walk away from this sermon. Settle the matter today. Hear the voice of Jesus, for whoever desires to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it.